Just a little bit of background, the East Texas area where we have done a lot of this work is much very similar to the remainder of the U.S. southern region. We are on the western edge of the coastal plain. We get rainfall, you know, much like the southern region. We're in about a 45-inch rainfall. Our base forage is or the warm season tropical grasses, and as Edzer talked about the overseeding the ryegrass, we often will overseed with some sort of annual forage like ryegrass or annual clovers. We do have limited cropping and limited plantings of some other types of annual forages. Lab is a project that we is fairly young in my breeding program. It is something that's been interesting for us. It's got lots of different names, as you see. The current or the best scientific name is Lab purpureus. It is known in some of the older literature by Dolichos Lab. It has connections all the way back into the Vigna genera and is fairly closely related to Vigna. It is a twining, running type legume, much like cowpea. It can be bushy. It generally does at least do some twining or running late in the season. Seed size is highly variable. If you look at the broad collections, you can see some real small seeded types here and some of the larger seeded types. I'll come back to the pod type because that's what we're going to talk about, but there is quite a bit of difference in pod type on Lab, and there's some implications in the pod type for seed production and the seed production process. There have been a couple of fairly recent reviews on using Lab and ruminant diets. It has a lot of really good characteristics. It's very drought tolerant. It's got a high nutritive value. It like you might expect from being a bean or a cowpea type plant, it's not very tolerant of grazing. You can graze it, but it does really sort of shines if you go through some sort of a control grazing. You see a photo here of some creep grazing that we did in the Overton area. And if you can creep graze it and where you have control, where you can control when the animals come and go, then it does better in that. There's also been some fairly recent research in the U.S. In Wisconsin and then later in New Mexico using Lab as a component of silage, using it to as an addition in a silage crop, whether it's corn or sorghum, and it really kind of boosts the protein in that silage. So, how did we get interested in Lab? Well, primarily because it was being sold like wildfire across the U.S. as a wildlife planting. So we had some interest in that. Dr. Roquette and I had done work earlier on cowpea. We had some interest in developing something that would be an annual legume pasture we could plant that cattle would use. We wanted to make use of some sort of a tropical legume from the quality viewpoint and from nutritive value and also from the ability of these plants to grow without a lot of additional nitrogen. And as you'll see in the next slide, one of the things that we found very early on was that we had much better acceptance by cattle with Lab than with cowpea. We can grow cowpea quite readily. It's very well adapted. There's a lot of different types out there, ranging from vegetable types to the older forage types. But it doesn't matter how well they grow if cattle do not eat them very well. We also had an interest in developing the Lab as a seed crop for Texas. We're always looking for ways to have value-added crops that are useful in both an operation like whether it's wildlife or whether it's cattle, but also we do have a seed production industry in the state, and we'd like to promote that, and we also had some funding for this from some of that industry. This is an older slide. It goes back to some of the work we did with the acceptance. And this shows, the photo shows a planting, row type planting of cowpea and lab after cattle had been grazing for 48 hours. What you see here is what's left of the lab. It's just the stems, and what you see here is what's left of the cowpea. It's all left. We had very little utilization of the cowpea in that time frame. Now, if you leave the animals on long enough, they will eat the cowpea. But it makes a difference when you're trying to creep graze something, that acceptance level. It's not the most important thing in the world, but so we don't want to emphasize acceptance too much, but we do like to see, when we turn something in, we turn cattle in, we like to see them use it. So out of that program, we released the Rio Verde lab. It's been out a couple of years. It was published in the Journal of Plant Registrations in 08. That's what that looks like. Talk a little bit more about it as we show you some of the data. Where are we going? What's our future in this? Well, we've got several problems. As always with new crops, there's always problems. There's never a shortage of those, it doesn't seem like. One thing we'd like to do is improve the seed yield. For a seed crop to be really useful, you need to have really high seed yield, or a really good seed yield, and good quality seed. So in doing that, we wanted to find parents that we could increase the seed yields. We also wanted to reduce the shattering. And I show you some of the seed pod things in a few minutes. You'll see that there's quite a bit of difference. And in the types that are the Rio Verde types, or the Rio Verde cultivar, we have, our seedsmen tell us that we can have probably anywhere from 10 to 20% shattering. And it makes a significant difference, and it is a financial difference for these guys. They'd rather see the seed going in their seed bags than going on the ground. We also have some problems with fungal diseases. You'll probably see me present about this again some later date, about anthracnose. If you take this plant and you put it in West Texas and you give it 100 degrees and you irrigate it, we have problems with anthracnose. So we're looking at anthracnose resistance. That's all from this slide, I think. So back to in about 08, we started looking at collections of this material. And this is just the data from the plants that produced enough seed for us to measure well. We looked at, in this particular year, we looked at about 100 plant introduction entries. And we only got really good seed production off of about 10. And this is just grams per row, but just think of it as a sort of an index number. This is Rio Verde seed production, and it's adequate. I mean, it's adequate enough that right now it's in commercial production, and the seedsmen are happy with it. They will take those yields, and they're fine. That translates out to somewhere around a 500 to 800 pounds per acre yield in a seed field situation. But as always, they'd like to see that to be more. So we did identify a couple of lines here that they were higher in seed yield. And so that sounded good, and that looked good so far, until you look a little further at when these hit full bloom. One of the things we like to see, whether it's in a almost any kind of a crop, we like to have a good growth of forage in a good full season, takes advantage of our production season, before we get into a lot of flowering and seed production. And as you see, Rio Verde goes into full bloom in late August, and that works pretty good. It doesn't stop growth in late August. We still get, it's indeterminate, so it continues to grow, and we can defoliate it in, we've defoliated it before in September, and it'll regrow if we have water, and I'll still be productive. But from a seed production viewpoint, we need it to flower sometime in this range. Otherwise, we get into problems with sensitivity to frost and that sort of thing. So if we look now back at these two again, we see, well, we've got one of these flowering in July. Well, that's probably a little too early, because we might could still use that line as a parent and cross it with a non-naturally flowering type. that'd be fine. But this one here probably looks the best overall, just out of this particular set of material, and would be something we'd choose as a parent to go forward in seed yield work. Okay, to the more to the part of this lab pod type. This is the what I would call sort of a standard pod type. This is a pod type of Rio Verde. These are, or I would classify these as flat and somewhat papery. If you took those pods and when they're dry, you put them in your hand, you crush them, you have clean seed. I mean, that's all there is to it. This is a different pod type from a different PI line. I call this leathery. If you put this in your hand and crush it, you still have the pods there, and that's about all. I mean, it's very, even when they're dry, they're pliable. They just do not shatter out seed very readily. They would probably be a big problem in seed production. You wouldn't have any shattering problems, but you would have cleaning problems, because by the time you adjusted the combine to clean this seed out, you'd have cracked seed, you'd have splits. It ruined the seed quality. So anyway, that was not a good choice. Also, we made crosses between those two types. The F1 plants were generally the flat loose type. We were looking at color in this also. I'm not going to follow color in this presentation. We may follow that at some other point. We looked at about 87 F2 plants. We look at these in the greenhouse and grow them out. And we found we found all kinds of things. We found a big range in pod type in the F2 generation of this. This is the parental type, the flat, the papery. This is the other parent, leathery. This is what we get. This is just a subsample of what we get. We get everything from the very flat, the very papery, all the way back to parentals, all the way back to some intermediate types like this. We propose this is probably a two-gene system that describes pod structure. Now, there may be more to it than this, but there are at least two. I'm pretty sure of that. Shape is one, where the dominant allele will give us flat, wide pods. Recessive will give us a rounder type pod. And then there's shrink. Shrink is the sort of the leathery or non-leathery. The dominant allele will give us a loose pod. The leathery or the recessive allele will give us a more leathery fitted pod. And this we fit this to a 9-3-3-1 ratio, and it fit quite well. And this is just an example of those genotypes, showing you the very flat loose type pod, the homozygous recessive, very leathery, somewhat rounded pod. Intermediates probably here. This is showing some of the strength that we would think of in leather, the leathery type pods, but it's not as it's wider than this one. And then we have an intermediate type, and this intermediate type is what we think we want for our seed production. We'll see. We're testing some advanced lines in this now. We think this will reduce the shatter, but still give us some good seed yield. So we'll see how that works out. But we do know a little bit more about the pod structure and the genetics behind it in lab from this study. And this just shows lab and seed production field in West Texas. Any questions? Yes, sir. Yes.
Do you find any potential of this line?
Excuse me, repeat that.
Do you find any potential of these lines in your breeding program?
The question is in the germplasm sets that we're looking at, do we find any very late non-flowering types that would have potential? Is that correct? Yes.
But very poor seed yield.
Yes, very poor seed yield. Yes.
So
The question is about the potential of the lines that are flowering very late with still some good seed yields. And yes, they may have potential. The problem is in balancing the seed production with the time of flowering, I guess. Another point is there are some really very beautiful lines that don't flower for us. So, and we'll use some of those too, some very high foragial lines that do not flower in our latitude. We'll probably still use some of those in crossing just because of the potential for the forage production, but we'll have to force them into bloom rather than relying on any kind of natural flowering. There was another question, I think. Maybe not. Yes, sir.
The environmental requirements for Labatt feel similar to Calpe in terms of rainfall or moisture?
Question is about the environmental requirements for Lab as related to Calpe. It is very similar, very, very similar. Calpe is possibly, Lab is perhaps a little better adapted to some of the heavier clay soils than Calpe.
Because Calpe is a crusting germination.
What we've seen is the Lab is a little better adapted in some cases to the higher pH, heavier soils that we have in some of our areas. I mean, we've tried to use this plant both on our sandy acid soils and on some of the soils in the central part of the state that have that are clay and high pH. And it tends to work a little better than Calpe on those heavy soils.
And how about for nitrogen fixation?
Nitrogen fixation in Lab is very dependent on getting a really good rhizobium on it. It's not as easy to nodulate as Calpe. It will nodulate with some Calpe strains, but in general, it does better with some very specific Lab strains.
Is that commercially available?
Yes.
Thank you.